Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Wonder Podcast, the podcast where we review and break down films all in one big, long, unbroken take. I'm Austin Archer, and with me, as always, is my childhood next-door neighbor and lifelong best friend.
Oh, hold on. Let me see if I can do this.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's not the best.
I was thinking of that. I was like, "What do I do the intro in Yautja? Do I go like,
yeah.
I don't know. And then we put subtitles under it. I wore a wolf hat. I mean, we grew up doing Boy Scouts. Yeah, you have to learn how to survive in the wild, out in the wilderness. And also, there's a thing about wolves in this movie, too.
Yes, he is. Yes, there about is.
Learning to be part of a pack.
Yeah.
This is Dan Trachtenberg's Predator Badlands in theaters right now. Mm-hmm. Dan Trachtenberg did Prey and also Killer of Killers.
Yes.
Which is an animated film that I think is on. I think they're both on Hulu.
Yes.
If you're curious about his previous work. I think it's safe to say that the Predator franchise has been revitalized by Dan Trachtenberg's work.
Yeah, it really, really has. And did you see Killer of Killers? Have you watched it?
I have not watched Killer of Killers yet.
I would recommend it. It's a fun movie as well. They really take advantage of animation. They kind of go, you know, it's a fun movie. And there's some good stuff in there. So anyway, I would recommend it.
I remember, you know, like, and I want to watch Prey again, too.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
I remember just being surprised by Prey and the concept and the execution and being like, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
But I don't think I felt about Prey as strongly as I feel about this movie. I saw the trailer for this, and knowing that it was made by the same guy that made Prey, I thought the trailer for this was like pretty good and just was like, I hope that movie is a fun time. Yeah. I gotta say, I think Predator Badlands rules. I loved this movie.
The movie was so much fun.
I just, like, from start to finish, every moment that they wanted to landed. Like, they just hit every punch, and I just was, I felt like a kid in the movie theater just watching a movie that exists just to be cool, you know?
Yeah,
like, it's hard, especially these days. I think it's always hard for movies to pull this off, where it's like the only thing you've got going. We talked about this a lot with Tron Ares, where it's like, if you're gonna be light on story and light on character development, and all you've got going for you is aura and vibes, and just like the movie's cool, you got to do a better job with those action set pieces. Like, it's got to be cooler. It's got to be even cooler than you're making it. And it just is like not quite cool enough if that's the only thing going for your movie.
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't know. In the sci-fi action thriller, I was talking about this last night on my Patreon. I was like, James Cameron is kind of the GOAT of the sci-fi action cool movie.
Right.
Terminator 2, Aliens, just movies that are like, it's not like it's, you know, masterful, important, deep cinema.
Right.
It's written well enough that you care about all the characters and you can watch them over and over and over again. And the moments that are supposed to hit always hit.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's what Predator Badlands felt like to me. It was just like a movie where I was like, this movie's gonna be fun to rewatch for years. It's gonna always, it's just cool. It's fun. It's entertaining. It's got, you know, it's just one of those movies like The Matrix. It's just like awesome. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Great stuff. Great visual effects. I mean, man, his face, I guess he didn't have, the actor wore the suit, but they kind of kept the face off, and I couldn't ever really tell. I mean, you can tell just because they couldn't do that, but it looked so good the whole time. I was never pulled out by bad visual effects in this whole movie.
No, it is a movie that is very CGI heavy. And sometimes in the modern era of filmmaking, I think we all can feel a little bit of CGI fatigue and just a little bit of like overuse, and our eyes kind of glaze over. But there's another movie coming out. Speaking of James Cameron, there's another movie coming out this year that we're probably going to talk about. And it's Avatar: Fire and Ash. It's the third Avatar movie. And I was thinking this movie has a lot in common with Avatar, in just the sense that like the filmmakers had to create these alien worlds and mm-hmm. create kind of an entire ecosystem, and almost everything about it is designed from scratch, and you know, it's almost all computer animated, and it's very fantastical in that way. Like the movie's yeah. about the how big can you imagine? And I like, my prediction is that, like, I kind of think that I'm going to like Predator Badlands more than, I mean, maybe it's because it'll be my third trip to Pandora, but I feel like this movie is every bit, the worlds on this movie are every bit as rich and interesting and visually stimulating as a movie that probably has two or three times the budget of this.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, I think this movie was made for like $100 million. And because the cast is so small, every dollar of that is on the screen, you know? And everything is going into making sure that these visual effects are as crisp and as clean and as impressive as possible. And it really is something like, you don't get pulled out of it really ever. At least I didn't, for a movie that, that is this CG heavy, everything just really felt tactile and real. And
I mean, I'm not okay. I love James Cameron. I think he's one of the best filmmakers. I really wish he wouldn't. I wish he would stop making Avatar movies, because they're his least. They're my least favorite movies of his. I actually think they're on the bottom of his list as far as movies are concerned, and especially his movies. But they're just not. I don't know. They just don't. They're not as good as other stuff that he's done. And I do get taken out because, like, yeah, the visual effects are amazing. You can't say that they're not good. But having said that, I know that it's all fake. And I know that, like, these, you know, the Na'vi people are not real. And I just, it's like, yeah, this looks really good, but I also just don't really care that much. And with this, I cared. And, like, there are real elements in all of this that makes a huge difference. And I know that they have real elements in Avatar. They have human actors, you know, and things like that. But this just had something that felt more tangible than Avatar has.
Well, and maybe too, it's because it's sort of rooted in a cinematic history that's been around a lot longer than the Avatar universe has. That, like, we've got the Weyland-Yutani Corporation in this movie, and that's not a spoiler. That's in the trailer. So we're definitely, like, continuing the idea that the alien movies exist cinematically in the same universe as at least the Predator species. And, you know, even though, like, movies like Predator and Predator 2 didn't overlap with Alien at all, or, you know, a lot of the Predator movies haven't, but, like, there's the AVP movies, and now there's this movie where they're sort of overlapping. And maybe it's that, like, makes us feel more rooted in this world, because everything's fake in this world too. But I think it just comes down to writing, and speaking of James Cameron, like, and maybe doing something else, my brother said to me in a text today, he was like, if Dan Trachtenberg can do this good of a job revitalizing Predator, maybe somebody ought to give him a crack at the Terminator franchise. And I'm like, yeah, that could be interesting, you know, like, I wonder what, because the problem with the Terminator franchise in my mind is that they've just kind of remade the same movie, like, like, five times in a row since the second one. They just, like, keep making, like, it's just like, oh no, another Terminator came back in time, and this time he's even more different than the last one. And it's just kind of like, we got to keep resetting the timeline of Skynet keeps sending more advanced Terminators back, and it's just like, cool, we're just like, is there any other narrative territory we can take this into? Are there any other ideas? And I think the only time that they really tried to do something significantly different was with Terminator Salvation, where it was like, hey, we're actually going to go into the war. Too bad that movie was directed by Mick G.
Unfortunately.
You know, but it's like, at least that's like a concept where it's like, we're gonna do something else with this world. And I feel like, credit to the Predator franchise, it's sort of a franchise that's always doing something else. Like, Predator 2 is significantly different from Predator 1, from the first Predator. Yeah. And then Predators is quite a different film from Predator 2.
Yeah.
The Predator is a pretty different film. It sucks. It's the worst one by far. Prey is a completely different concept. Yeah. And, yeah. you know, I mean, I haven't seen Killer of Killers, but now we've got this one that I yeah. think, you know, for my money, I'll say this in the spoiler-free section. This is my favorite Predator movie. Predator yeah. Badlands is my favorite one.
Yeah, this is a great one. I mean, it's kind of got everything. And yeah, we talked a little bit before. They are just trying different stuff. They're not doing the same thing over and over and over. And I mean, there's also Alien versus Predator.
Right.
Which, I mean, you can count that in here. And Alien versus Predator Requiem, which I think we both agree is the worst movie.
Yeah.
One of the worst movies ever. But
I think AVP Requiem is worse than The Predator.
Yeah. I kind of want to watch The Predator again. I think I might, because I've been watching these over and over, which Predator 2 is such a weird movie.
I think Predator 2 doesn't get its flowers enough. I think that I like the weirdness of Predator 2.
It's like dialed up to 11. But
yeah, I just like the idea of this, like, cop just fighting in the city with this thing that he can't possibly understand.
They move it from the jungles to the city, which is, again, like, that's a big difference. That it's not the same movie. So they are always trying something different. And you got to appreciate it, and good for them for, you know, and it's working out. I mean, really, Dan Trachtenberg has kind of really revitalized this franchise when even Shane Black couldn't, who is an amazing filmmaker.
I think that too often, my personal opinion is that people can get a little too sacrosanct and special about the originals, and just I feel like there's like this rule that so many people have where you're just like not allowed to say that something that's made 20, 30, 40 years later is better than the original. It's just like, no, you're not allowed to say that. And I just am like, of course you are. I think it's silly that people like don't want to say that Andor is the best thing ever made in the Star Wars universe. I'm just like, it is. It's like there's no writing on the level of Andor anywhere else in the Star Wars cinematic universe. Right. It's far and above anything that's ever, in my opinion. But like, it's okay to at least just to say that. It's okay to like admit that the ideas, the blueprint that was laid out by that original trilogy was taken and improved upon by somebody who grew up watching those films. I think it's so, I just, it's like, it reminds me of this fight one time that my roommates got into in college and that lasted like all night long, where they were arguing over what what the greatest video game of all time is. And my one roommate was like, it has to be Pong. It has to be Pong because none of the other video games could exist without it. You know, just the paddles moving back and forth. And it's the first video game. And so without it, you can't, it lays the framework. And my other roommate was arguing that Doom was like one of the most influential video games of all time, that it like set the blueprint for first person shooters, which are like the most popular, you know, kind of format, and like that it really sort of pushed the whole form forward.
Yeah.
They were just in this really heated debate over like, can something that was influenced by the earlier thing be better than the earlier thing? And my personal opinion is like, yes, like we should be hoping to improve.
Yeah.
We should be hoping to do better as we go on. And
it's funny. They're kind of arguing two different things. Like,
right.
Yeah, of course, you can't say that the first of everything is the best of everything, because everything is made to be improved on, you know, like, and also I always find it really funny when people argue about opinions, because your favorite video game or what you think is the best video game is going to be different. And the same with movies, like
it's subjective.
It is completely subjective. Movies are absolutely 100% subjective. A lot of us agree on many, many things, and it's fine to argue about it and why you like it and why not, but there is no definitive answer. So
that being said, first of all, you know, like there are all these people who think that like, you can't be better than the original.
Yeah.
Like, these are all people that would probably say Empire Strikes Back is the best Star Wars movie. And it's like,
true. Cool. Yeah.
It's like, that's not the original. That's a sequel, you know?
Yeah.
But like, also, that being said, that like opinions are opinions. They're your own. They're subjective. It's stupid. It's stupid to argue about. This movie is getting very good reviews across the board on the different aggregators on the internet. Although I will say, the anti-woke critics out there on YouTube are having a field day with this movie for some reason, calling it like Disney's woke Predator movie. And again, your opinion is your opinion, but yeah. I just think those people are some of the most insufferably miserable people. I'm just like, hey, can you just enjoy anything? And yeah. Also, you're wrong. Like, what do you mean this movie is woke? It's the it was the most overtly boy movie I've seen in so long, where it was just like, hey, this is just a movie for dudes to just watch some like hardcore awesome stuff, dude. Yeah. Like, this is a high-fiving, you know, good old-fashioned action movie.
Yeah.
And it's just, they're like, but there's a girl in it. It's like, okay, guys, all right.
I know, there's a girl in the original Predator.
Right. The Predator is coded as a black man. It's like, well, it's an alien species, but he's always sort of been coded as a black man and always performed by a black.
A black or a person of color. Yeah. Like that. It really is. And they have always had extremely diverse casts.
Right.
Like the first one. You've got Schwarzenegger and Jesse Ventura, who are like the white guys. And then you've got two other black actors. You've got a Hispanic actor of Hispanic descent, and you've got a Native American actor.
Arguably the most famous frame from the first movie is Schwarzenegger and Carl Weathers grabbing arms like this.
Yeah,
like, and it's a white bicep and a black bicep. Yeah. And it's a symbol of like, we're coming together to defeat racism, brother. And we're doing it in the Predator, brother.
Yeah. This is just a great movie. And these are all things that you can do to try and add something new to a franchise rather than try it. Like how can I make this franchise woke? Like Dan Trachtenberg wasn't sitting there thinking, how can I add more of, you know, X, Y, and Z into this to make it more woke? He's not thinking that.
No, he's literally just going like, what would make a cool Predator movie? And and he's right. And then people, everyone, like I also, again, your opinion can be your opinion, but and this is not a spoiler, but like the protagonist of this film is a predator. That's the whole thing, is that like, if you've seen the trailer, the protagonist of the film is this entire franchise. The predators have only ever been the bad guys. Yeah. It's like if you decided to make a movie from the perspective of a xenomorph in the Alien franchise, they've only ever been the bad guys. Although I will say Alien Earth did a little bit of a tweak on like, maybe they could be,
you know, but Alien versus Predator, the Predator is one of the protagonists.
That's what I'm saying. There were so many critics that were going like, you can't make the Predator a protagonist. And I'm like, it's already been done.
Yeah, it's been done. We're past this.
They already did it in Alien versus Predator. I know that like in Alien versus Predator, the Predator is kind of indifferent to the humans. He's just there to do battle with the xenomorphs, but he winds up teaming up with our human protagonist.
Yeah.
And then also like, there's sort of an established thing with the predator species, which in this movie, we come to find out what they're called, but like we've never known before this, but there's sort of an established thing that they have kind of like an honor code. Like at the end of Predator 2, when Danny Glover beats the predator that he's been fighting, there's this like scene on a predator ship where he gets surrounded by all of these predators. And it's like, oh man, he's done for. But they're basically just like, well done. You killed you killed the guy that we sent in to get you. So good job. And we're going to leave now. And there's sort of this established thing where they're sort of like a species that's like, good job.
Bye. And actually, that's Killer of Killers gets into this.
Yeah.
Again, I would say go watch it, man. It's a fun watch.
I will.
And it's they change up the Predator. This is the other thing. Okay. I love what Dan Trachtenberg has done with his two Predator live action. Well, his Predator movies that he's made, because he also made Killer of Killers at the same time he was making Badlands, which is crazy.
Oh, Badlands,
But he changes up how the Predators look. Like in Prey, they made it's a feral Predator is what they call it, which is like a less evolved one, and he looks a little bit different. I love how that Predator looks. And in this one, is it Deck or Dak?
Deck.
Deck is a runt. He's a runt of the litter, right? Like that. So he's smaller than everybody else. And most of the other predators that we do see in the movie look more traditional predator. But I like how they, the changes that they made. They made him look different. They made him look smaller. His features are smaller. It works for the story. Like, oh, yeah. I like that he is and in Killer of Killers, he's got four distinctly different predators, which are really cool. Like, go for it, man. I like making these little tweaks on the character and on the monsters.
Yeah, and there's people again that are just like, well, how come he's changing the design? And it's like, yeah, again, they've literally always been doing this. Like,
yeah,
every Predator movie has done new designs with, like, I just, it's so weird when people just want to be mad about something, so yeah, they just start like pointing at something that's like, that's actually not a problem. Again, you can have whatever opinion you want. If the movie just didn't work for you, that's fine. But if your complaint is like, this movie changed the design of the Predator and you're not supposed to do that, it's like, well, then you're just wrong about what the Predator franchise is. You're just,
yeah,
that's actually an objective thing that you're wrong about. Mm. Or if it's like, this movie had a female character in it, it's like, yeah, so do, like, yeah, what do you mean? Like, that's, yeah, this is nowhere near the first time that we've had a main character in a movie featuring a predator who is a woman. Like, you're just, yeah, it doesn't seem like you know what this franchise is. Yeah. Anyway, I obviously, we really like this movie, so go, yeah, see it in theaters.
Please do.
Go check it out. It's a lot of fun, and you're going to want to see it on a big screen. I saw it on an IMAX screen with a very full theater, and my theater was like really raucous. People were like cheering and laughing, and nice. It was great. Yeah. Laughing in a good way. Because movie is funny, and you know, not too much, not like Thor Ragnarok or, you know, something like that, but it's a nice balance. And okay, cool. Let's get into spoilers. So the movie starts out on the home planet of the Predators. I just really loved that Dan Trachtenberg really took us. I liked the deepening of the lore. It's like, it's time. Mm-hmm. It's time. Yeah. There was a time for the mystery of it all, and now it's time to be like, listen, we've been hiding in mystery of like, who are these? What are this species? Where do they come from?
Yeah.
For long enough. I think the whole entire idea of this movie was like, let's just, it's sort of like, you know, what Ridley Scott was trying to do with Prometheus, and that it was like, hey, let's maybe demystify the origin of the Xenomorphs a little bit, you know? Mm-hmm. And this sort of demystifies that for us. But yeah, this opening shot I thought was really cool and just smart. I think from the opening moments, this movie, I think, is written in a really slick and smart way. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we see this little like egg hatch, and this little like bug comes out of an egg, and then it's immediately eaten by a bigger alien bug. And then that bigger alien bug is immediately eaten by something bigger than it.
Yep.
And then a spaceship of one of the, you know, of Deck flies by and slices that thing in half. And we see the, you know, this big landscape of like the home planet of the Yautja. I forgot too, the opening quote.
Yeah. Says, it's like from their codec or something. It's basically their Bible, which is like,
yeah,
a predator is a friend to none. What is the quote?
Which is important for the movie too. Yeah. So it's like, it's friend to none, prey to none, predator to all, or I think.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah, it's
A Yautja is friend to none, prey to none, and predator to all.
And it's great. It's a great, and then give some reference, you know, their thing. I thought that was cool too, which I think that's how Prey opens as well, is with another quote from that codex or whatever, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, I've definitely heard people say before that they don't like when movies open with quotes by fake characters that the movie that are made up.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, I, you know, it's kind of like, I like when Dune opens up with the voice of the Satyrkar being like the spy, you know, being like, I like that.
I like it too. I think it's also good. This is the thing, like, when you open things like that, when you open with fake quotes from fake Bible type books or whatever, all it's doing is it's giving you a history.
Right.
Like, oh, there's history to these people. There's more to these people than just like savages, you know, that it's letting you know that like they have their own order. They have their own set of values and their own set of rules, and it just makes you, it hints at like there's a lot more to these there's a lot more to this race of predators, right?
So. I think that's the, like, we've, again, and this has always been part of the franchise, like the end of Predator 2, when they confront Danny Glover and then go like, good job. And like, you, it really implies, yep, that, oh, there's like a whole kind of code that these people live by. Yeah. And there, and it, and I, on that ship too, he sees that they've been coming to Earth periodically for like seemingly hundreds of years,
yeah,
that they really get a kick out of like fighting humans, which I also thought was another interesting thing about this movie, is like that we see the kind of prey that predators go after, the Yautja go after, mm-hmm, to try to gain, you know,
yeah,
status in their clan. And to know that like among those, among these like crazy alien species that they'll fight are humans, that they find, yeah, humans to be a very formidable foe.
Yeah.
And we don't think of ourselves that way. We see these like other big animals that they're fighting, but they're just like, there's something about that species that's particularly hard to crack. Like,
yeah,
that species has gotten the better of us more than once over, yeah, you know, throughout, yeah, history.
Again, killer of killers. You can, yeah, see some of this. It's a fun, it is like they do keep going after humans, and yeah, it's fun to see the different skulls. I guess there is, and I noticed this too, there's a skull of the Independence Day aliens.
Oh,
that like really wide,
yeah, you
know, really wide. I'm pretty sure that's the Independence Day aliens, also another Fox property. But yeah, that was, you know, I think that's just a fun little tidbit. I don't think they're going to do anything with that, but it is cool to see. I mean, the skulls of all the different things. I mean, I think they have, didn't they have a T-Rex skull, I think, in this?
Something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think that it's like a sign of respect from the Yautja that they find you to be, yeah, a formidable enough opponent to go after regularly. That,
yes,
like, if you weren't formidable enough, then it wouldn't be honorable to kill you.
Yeah,
like it,
yeah,
wouldn't, you, yeah, know, mm-hmm, and like you wouldn't be a trophy. And yeah, but you have to be a prey that is capable of defending itself in, yeah, some kind of respectable way in order to be worthy of a Yautja even wanting to hunt you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's cool. I don't know. Yeah. Like, I think it's, I just like how big the world and the lore gets just with this one installment. It's always been, right, kind of implied. And I like that Dan Trachtenberg's like, it's time to just fully go there. And that it, you know, whereas like Prometheus, a lot of the stuff that they try to do to go like, this is the origin point with the engineers is a little, it just doesn't quite hit. And it
yeah,
doesn't satisfy the itch we've been wanting to scratch for all those,
no,
years. This really does. It's like, mm-hmm, right away we're going like, yeah, this is what I figured their society, yeah, would be like,
yeah,
you know. And that's, again, there were a lot of people that were like, I don't like how much he talks, and I'm like, you know that they're an intelligent species, right?
Yeah.
And also, he's been talking in every movie, like,
yeah, like if it, yeah, he will mimic human speech, right?
Yeah,
like that's, mm-hmm, and he'll mimic their laughter, and they'll, mm-hmm, they'll do all those things, which is really cool. But like, how could they not be intelligent and understand space travel? Like, they'd have to communicate to get invisibility cloaks that they use. Like, they're smart beings.
He's got a little arm computer, but they've never developed language, you know.
Yeah, like, they don't know, they don't get it.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's just I don't know, there's a lot of criticism of this film where I'm just like, no, you're missing, yeah, out, you're missing out on a fun time.
Yeah. But
yeah, our main character Deck flies into this like cave where he is, yeah, he's looking for his brother, and you know,
yeah,
and he starts speaking and he's like, I can sense you, you know, you're hiding, yeah, in your cloak, yeah, and him and his older brother Quay,
yeah,
have a big fight that's awesome and
yeah, very cool.
And you right away
his brother is a lot bigger, a, yep, lot bigger than he is.
Right away we're getting a lot of story here that, yeah, it's like Deck is, you know, very clearly, yeah, smaller, but also that he's got a lot of pride.
He does. And yeah, he's not afraid.
Yeah. And him and his brother are like going at it. Like they're not sparing each other, but also there's a sense that like Quay he cares about Deck.
Yeah.
But also in this fight, like Quay like throws him off a cliff, and it's just sort of like, well, if you don't make it back up, that's sort of it. So this is we're just learning a lot about what we already kind of knew about the species, which is like, I think Quay and Deck like each other more than is maybe common.
Yes.
Amongst Yautja siblings, yeah. But also Quay still they are still very much so like a product of their upbringing. So, you know, but Deck sort of saves himself. He climbs back up and he's like, "I'm not dead. I'm still here."
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And then they decide to like, all right, cool. Let's go back to the ship and let's mm-hmm. talk. And we get a little piece of information here where Deck says they get onto this ship and we're seeing the skulls and all that stuff. And Deck goes, he says to his brother, like, "You kept the toy." And then he's like, "Yeah, Dad, you remember you saved my life. You saved me from that when I was a kid." And he goes, "Yeah, I broke my fang." Yeah. And we noticed that not only is Deck a runt, but one of his fangs is like cut in half. Mm-hmm. And Quay tells Deck that he's got to pick an animal to kill in order and bring a trophy home if their father is going to accept him into the tribe. Yeah. And so we're, you know, this is all stuff that like you is implied about this species that like obviously that they are sort of like ritual hunters and mm-hmm. they hunt for pride and they hunt as a status symbol. And they're sort of scanning through animals and Deck sees this one and he goes, go back that one. And it's the Kalisk on this planet called Jenna. And, or is it Gemma?
I think it's Gemma Genna.
Genna.
It's Genna. Yeah. Cause I was like, that looks like Jenna. And it's like, no, it's Genna. So I'm Genna. Pretty sure that's what it is. Yeah.
But yeah, and his brother's like, oh, but he calls it the death planet. He goes, that's the death planet. And he's like, and then you can't, nobody can kill a Kalisk. He's like, you can't do it. And the writing of this movie is simple and just good and right. Because right away it's like, I just like Deck. And Deck, and he doesn't feel like not a predator. Like he feels like he belongs to this species. But he just says, because his brother's like, nobody can kill it. And he's like, and by the way, like you're one of the weakest ones in our clan. So, and then he goes, so if I'm the weakest, then I have to kill the strongest.
Yeah.
And I think that's cool that he's just like, well, if I'm going to have any shot at impressing Dad, I've got to do the most impressive thing.
Well, and and it's also not like Deck is extremely good at what he does. He's not like he's small, but he is really, and even his brother, even Quay says, like, you fight with a lot of rage, but he's, you know, he says you still have weaknesses or something like that. But like, he's not like annoying. Like you can tell, like he really, really has to improve, or he has to prove himself. And with everything that we know from this culture is like, they're already like very prideful and they're very, you know, they really take what they're doing seriously. So he comes off as like, not annoying or like trying to get something. He seems like he really wants to contribute. So it's a very endearing quality that we, you know, it's pretty easy to like him pretty early on.
Yeah, I think that, and I'm just going to make this up right now that like the other part of my outfit is my Utah shirt.
Oh, yeah.
Because my favorite Utah Ute of all time is Britton Covey. And you know, and like sometimes these little short guys in football, Britton Covey's like 5'7", 5'8".
He was not very tall,
165 pounds. And he's out there on the field with guys that are all like at least 6'2", up to 6'4", 6'5", and they all weigh 250 to 300 pounds. And he's my favorite. Like, it's just like just because you're little doesn't mean you can't play.
Yeah.
And Deck is, he's not like an annoying little runt. That's like, oh, come on, let me play. Yeah. Quay. He's Deck's hardcore, dude.
Yeah. He is hardcore.
And Deck's awesome, but like we see him, you know, get better throughout the film too.
Yeah.
But their dad shows up and their dad is, you know, what you would expect from this species.
Yeah.
He's completely merciless. He has no regard for, you know, there's no like sentiment that sentimentality that he feels towards.
Yeah. I love his mask. He's got the horns, you know, which look really, really cool. So he's obviously has some sort of status. It looks kind of like some sort of crown. And he's obviously the leader of this group, whichever. And I mean, he's got the white dreads. He just looks, I loved the design of the dad.
Yeah.
He goes up to Quay immediately and he's like, "Why have you not killed your brother?" Which is like, oh my gosh. Like, what? Like you get an idea immediately of how the hierarchy works And he's like, he basically says, we need to cull the herd, and he is making us more weak. And Quay starts standing up for him. He's like, no, he should get a hunt. Like, Deck needs a hunt. Mm-hmm. And his dad's not having any of it. So he's like, no. So he's like, well, if you're not going to do it, I'm going to do it. So he shoots this little like laser thing around Deck, and it pins him to the ground, or at least he gets on his knees and he can't move his hands.
And then, yeah, he tells Quay, like,
and he tells Quay to kill him. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he says, sorry. And then he breaks the little hold on it, and he kicks him into his own ship. Right.
Yeah. And the ship closes and
yeah.
The screenplay does a really good job of just like with a few lines, with a few moments, establishing the fact that like there is a rapport between these siblings that is uncommon. But, and then, yeah, again, when the dad shows up, it's like, that wasn't supposed to be a training fight. You were supposed to kill your brother.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, it's like that. It tells us so much about the cruelty of the world that they live in. But also how rare their connection is. And that tells us a lot about our main character, that he also, that just like as Quay feels something for him, he feels something for Quay. And then his reaction to this, because since Quay saves him and now he's stuck in the ship, his dad's like, all right, I'll kill you. Mm-hmm. And the dad just fights Quay and basically just like, just annihilates him, like slices his arm off and picks him up. And this whole time, like Dex like freaking out, like pounding the door of the ship.
Yeah.
Trying to get out and fight his dad, and his dad just cuts his brother's head off right in front of him, and it just sort of shows like the brutality of this world. And you know, basically I think like Deck at that point is like, okay, well, I think he understands at that point that he's not strong enough to fight his dad. Like if his dad just killed Quay that easily, it's not likely that he's going to be able to to fight And so he's like, okay, the plan is I'm going to go to Genna and I'm going to kill a Kallusk, and then I'm going to come back and like show my dad like, hey, you know, but so he takes off, you know, the idea is like, it's basically, which I think it also gives this movie really high stakes from the jump. Like we're 10 minutes into the movie and it's like, okay, so for this character, this is like win or die.
And I mean, yeah, this is really, so he lands on the planet, you know, you see him kind of crash land because his ship is breaking up, but he crash lands on the planet. He gets all of his gear together, and then he has a fight like with these tree monster things that are like almost like tree worm things that are trying to kill him, which was a really fun sequence. Right. And it kind of shows that. But after that, we see Predator Badlands come up on screen. It's like 15 minutes and we're already, that's the first act.
I will say like, I wish that Predator Badlands hadn't had like the property 20th century.
I know. Yeah. It was kind of funny how they did that.
I was like, why did they make them do that? I think I think the title card would have looked cooler aesthetically. If it was,
without
the little like,
it felt kind of old school, which I don't,
maybe
I,
that's
I,
the
I'm
idea.
Not exactly sure why, but I thought it was, I noticed that as well.
Yeah,
but this is the thing that I was.
It felt to me like a video game.
Yeah, it did. It kind of it felt very different. But
yeah,
you know, whatever. But
yeah,
this is the thing. Like we're 15 minutes into the movie and we're out of the first act, and like this is the second act. I was like, wow, that was like extremely efficient storytelling, because the first thing you want to do in a story with the first act, you want to set up the normal world, which is what we got with him fighting in with his, you know, brother. And then you want to set their world out of order. Mm-hmm. And that's when his brother gets killed. Right. Or when, you know, his dad shows up and he's got to, so we set all this stuff up and then you got to send the person on their journey. And we set this all up in like 15 minutes. And I'm like, okay, I know exactly what he needs to do. His objective is to go kill this thing. His want, Deck's want, is to go and kill this animal so that he can return home to prove himself to his father. And obviously his want, but that's not what he needs. But anyway, it was great. Like I was so surprised by how efficient this first act was.
I've always liked the simplicity of all of the Predator movies. I think all of the, I think maybe like the problem with The Predator is that they try to get too complex with the story.
Yeah.
And like same with like AVP Requiem, where it's like, what are you guys doing? Like, yeah, what, yeah, what it, like, it's like this weird, like teen slasher movie mixed with aliens and predators. And also Predator 2 a little, I do like Predator 2, but it's like, the storytelling gets a little too like,
yeah,
I think that Predator movies work really well when the story is like really simple and yeah, just like, it's, you know,
yeah. And that's the benefit of action movies is usually, yeah, the thing that they're trying to overcome or the goal that they're trying to attain is a physical one.
Right.
And that's easy to get. It's easy to absorb. And it leads to a lot of great action because, like, I mean, a lot of James Bond movies, there's not a lot of emotional arcs that are going on. I mean, they don't, I'm not saying they don't happen in those movies, but like this one, it's a very easy arc that I can see that's happening, but they still add these emotional beats into it, right? Like it's not just a physical goal that he has to figure out. There's still a little bit more. So
I actually think that it's one of the most satisfying emotional arcs in the entire franchise. This is why,
absolutely,
one of the big reasons why this is my favorite. One is like, I don't really know. I mean, there is an arc that Arnold Schwarzenegger's character goes on. Like he gets humbled by watching all of his friends die and has like, you know, and there's an arc that Danny Glover's character goes on. But there's something about Deck as the protagonist that sort of recontextualizes this entire franchise into like, oh, they come from a planet where, like, in all of these films, the predator that Arnold Schwarzenegger and you know, all of those guys were fighting in the jungle, the predator that Danny Glover was fighting, the predators on the planet with Adrian Brody and everybody, they're all part of this society that's like, you either win this hunt or you're at like, or we'll kill you.
Yeah.
So like, there's actually stakes for the Yautja in all of these films that we're not necessarily privy to. It's sort of implied that it's part of their society that it's like win or die, you know, but actually getting to see it from their point of view, that it's like, this character has no choice but to survive this incredibly inhospitable planet. And I really loved the design of both planets, the Yautja Prime home planet and the Genna planet. I thought they were really, I thought the design team did a really great job building something that felt unique and fresh and cool and had a lot of cool new fresh ideas. Yeah, this opening fight with like these vines and stuff.
Yeah.
I like that he's laying out all of his weapons. So like, first, when he comes into the planet, it's like even just landing on the planet, it's surrounded by a ring of rocks and it like
messes up his
ship. So he has to like do an escape pod thing. So all of the weapons that are on the ship, he's separated from those. He doesn't have like all of his artillery, but he's still got a few weapons with him in the escape pod. And he's like laying all those out, getting ready for the hunt. And while he's doing that, these like vine monsters steal most of his weapons.
Yep.
And he's literally only left with his sword. Like
he's got his sword and I guess he doesn't end up with his little bow and arrow thing.
Yeah, no.
Right. And he's got the little like thing that he can throw on his arm.
Yeah. He's got like,
I think that's about it. Yeah.
I think that's fun too, that this movie keeps taking things away from him.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't have his helmet. He doesn't have, which he loses his helmet earlier in the fight with his brother. But all of the weapons that we're accustomed to predators having, you know, the invisibility, the helmet, the like arm bombs, grenades, you know.
Well, and that, I thought that was interesting too, because he didn't have his his cloak thing to make him invisible. He has to earn that,
right?
Which I thought was really interesting too. So he's like, "Hey, where's my cloak?" And he doesn't get it, so he doesn't have it through the whole movie until the end. But yeah,
which is cool.
It
just tells us a lot about that. It's like, oh, like this is just a species that is very violent and very brutal, but also has a lot of pride and has a lot of like, they, everything that they have is they feel like they've earned. But yeah, so once he's on the planet, it's Predator Badlands, here we go. He's looking for the Kalisk. It's win or die, and those are the stakes of the film. But they say it in the trailer, like everything in this movie is trying, everything on this planet is trying to kill you. And they really do a good job of showing that. It's just like, man, around every corner on this planet is something trying to kill you. Like,
And he he has to patch up a wound on his arm, and then there's like this little worm that like starts getting bigger, and he's like, oh, and he throws it away and it explodes.
Yeah, but like, I immediately too was like, I like that sometimes movies have characters just like look at something like that and just wait for it to explode, and then I go like, obviously, so many of the Alien movies have characters who go onto Alien, like Alien Covenant. It drives me nuts. But they go onto an alien planet and they're just interacting with like completely new vegetation and just being like, oh, interesting, and just looking at stuff up close. And I'm like, put a mask on. Yeah. What are you doing? You know, or Prometheus, when the guy sees the little snake come out of the thing, and he's like, oh. And I'm like, I'm glad that Deck sees the thing start to puff up and throws it. I'm like, yes, yes. Get like, have the instinct to be like, not, nope. Like, you know, but it turns out this little caterpillar is like a little hand grenade.
Yeah.
Which is, I also love the way that all of this stuff comes back into play.
Yes. It's all foreshadowed.
It's just really smart. I've heard a few reviewers who really liked this movie say that it has a great opening and a great ending, and it kind of drags in the middle. I disagree. I feel like this movie moves at a nice pace the entire time. I agree. Yeah.
I thought it was, and the rest of the movie is also structured very, very well. So, I wasn't ever bored.
No.
So.
Yeah, we see Deck sort of making his way around this planet and coming across various different forms of threats.
Yeah.
And then at one point he's in this field, and you've seen this on the trailer where there's these plants that like puff up and they shoot spikes out if you get close to them, and then they immediately regenerate. I mean, they're in, and while he's in this field, Elle Fanning's character calls out to him and says like, hey, Yautja, like, you know, she recognizes him as a part of this species. And she initially tries to speak to him in his native tongue, but he's having a hard time understanding her. So she uses a universal translator because she's a synthetic.
I thought that was a good little way. She's like, she's like, universal translator, you hear whatever language is yours. And I was like, oh, okay. It's a good way for us to hear her English and for him to understand her. I thought it was a good little.
It also means that the movie doesn't have to be entirely in subtitles the entire time, which also, like, this is like another element of this film that's really impressive is a lot of it is in subtitles.
Yeah.
Like, there are two speaking characters for the majority of the film, and it's Elle Fanning and Deck, and everything Deck says is in a made up language. Yeah. I really like the how far the linguist went to create this language, and it's cool.
Yeah, it is a cool little thing. She's telling him like, oh, these barbs, they're going to, if they shoot you, they're going to paralyze you. And then that thing, there's like a pterodactyl thing going, a big bird thing going around, and it's dropping like rocks, and it's trying to get everything to explode so that it can paralyze Deck and it can eat him.
I love this too. I loved like the way that this mirrors just the like nature, like predators in nature, it's not necessarily for a lot of animals, like it's not personal. It's not, it's just the way, because like eagles do this kind of stuff. Like they'll, you know, like eagles will swoop down and grab goats off of the side of mountains and then take them and drop them and just drop them from a high height. And so they'll like land on the rocks and die, and they don't have to worry about like killing them themselves. And then they'll go down and get it while it's like incapacitated. And it doesn't necessarily need to be dead. It just needs to have its legs broken, but like the way that animals have just come up with like problem solving of this big predator bird in the sky is like, oh, cool, there's someone down in that field. I'm just going to drop rocks to make the paralyzing plants spray him. And sort of the way that an ecosystem works together to like help each, you know, I just thought like that theme in this movie was really cool.
Yeah.
The idea of like, you know, that like there's an ecosystem to everything, and there's and there's always something bigger, you know, with that first image of the film of like this thing gets eaten by this thing gets eaten by this thing. Yeah. And a big part of this film is Deck realizing that it's okay to be a part of something bigger than himself, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and he does get hit, you know, in the neck and a few different other places, and she's like, you're gonna pass out real quick, but I can help you. So he gets his little wrist knife thing, And he's like, he can either, he has a choice. He can either throw it at the thing, at the pterodactyl thing, or he can throw it at Elle Fanning to get help. And he kind of looks at it and he throws it at Elle Fanning. She gets out somehow, and the pterodactyl's coming, and then she kills him. She kills the pterodactyl. And then she's like, hey, what's up? Like, thanks.
Yeah.
And he, like, she's able to heal him. She knows a lot about this planet. And they have, like, she gets him up and he's like, you know, I can't have your help. But ultimately she convinces him, like, listen, I'm a tool. I can be a tool for you. So he calls her the whole movie, like, you're just a tool.
Which, yeah, he calls her pretty funny. I like that he calls her just like tool. He's like, yeah, tool, help me. You know, like, yeah, it, like, in his mind, it's like, I can only use something if, yes, I'm using it like a weapon. Like, I can't, mm-hmm, it can't be another person or a friend who helps me out. But as we know from all of these movies, Yautja are totally cool with using, yeah, weapons, with using tools. And so if he can think of Elle Fanning as a weapon or a tool, like a compass, because, yeah, she's gonna direct him to where the Kallusk is, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And she's also got half a body. And, yeah, so he's carrying her around. And I did like this scene where he, like, makes the little backpack out,
yeah,
of the,
yeah,
out of the vines. And but yeah, they're going around, and he just, now it's a duo. And it, yeah, you know, her character is really fun. She's like trying to make friends with him the whole movie.
Yeah.
But he's just like, I'm not here to be your friend. Like, you're my compass. You're my tool.
Yeah.
You're going to help me.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, which, and that's where a lot of the humor comes from, is like his seriousness and her, yeah, kind of playfulness. And, yeah, so some people have an issue with this, but I don't know.
Yeah, this didn't bother me. I actually like this because I do feel like it all paid off later. Because
totally,
she says, like, listen, I've been programmed. They have a conversation. This might even be a little bit later, but she tells him, like, I was programmed to have a lot more empathy for things and to understand these creatures, to empathize with them more.
Yeah.
And she's like, that's so that I can understand them and that I can, you know, help. And I thought this paid off really well later, but that's why she's so helpful, and she's so, like, jolly, and she's so, like, happy. But she was programmed that way because, obviously, yeah, she's a synthetic. She's the Weyland Yutani, you, yep, know, synthetic. But, and also, it was, I found this, I heard an interview with Dan Trachtenberg, but he went on the set of Alien Romulus,
mm-hmm,
and he was talking to the director, Fede Alvarez, right?
Yeah.
And he told him about the eyes moving in the back of their head, and it would have the Weyland Yutani eye on there.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, I'm totally stealing that. So he would use it. Dan Trachtenberg used it a lot. You see, yeah, that Elle Fanning's eyes always roll back and they have that. I thought that was kind of a cool little, like, oh, you did this, so I'm gonna use it in my movie now.
Yeah.
But anyway, she was a great character. I thought Elle Fanning was a great character in this movie.
Yeah, it's needed. You need, like, and,
yeah,
and again, there's no human beings in this film. It's, no, all of the humanoid characters are synths, which, yeah, is why the movie's able to be PG-13, because a lot of the violence that happens with, like, humanoid characters has, yeah, the synth blood. And but, yeah, it's like, I just think this movie's so impressive because it's like there's two characters that are speaking for most of the film, and there are no human characters, and it's all on an alien planet, and I'm totally invested in these characters and they're weird, like, it's this little odd couple pairing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, Dex gotta eat, so they see these big kind of like giant creatures, yeah, that are roaming in these fields, and he's gonna go out and try to hunt them because that's what he does. He's a hunter.
Well, and he wants to eat the meat that the animal eats. That what is he hunting? Oh my gosh, I can't even believe I forgot. The Kallusk. The Kallusk eats these things, so he's like, yeah, I am going to eat what the Kallusk eats.
And I don't remember him saying that. That's,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, that's what he said. So that's why he goes after him. I can't remember what they're called. They're like called bone something, or bone bison. They're called bone bison.
I was gonna say they sort of remind me of like buffalo, like alien bison.
Yeah.
But I thought this was a really cool concept too. He sees them in this field and he tries to walk up to the field, and Elle Fanning's like, that's grass that's like razor sharp. It'll slice you up if you go into it. So he's got to figure out how to like get to him. And that's when like this little like monkey guy shows up, and little character that it sort of reminded me of, like, the monkey that they find in the 1990s Lost in Space movie, that terrible movie. Initially I got a little nervous here because I was like, am I gonna hate this?
Cute little monkey thing. Yeah.
Cute little Jar Jar Binks character or something. but I never actually found this character to be like too much or like obnoxious. I felt like they used this character really well. And what Deck finds out pretty quickly is like he starts fighting this character because I can't remember why, but like it's like very strong. It's a lot stronger than it looks. And
you can't penetrate its skin. It's like really hard. Like it'll wrap up in a ball. And just like, and it can roll through the razor grass and like, because its skin's so thick, it can't do anything to it. So
I thought they platformed this so well, like especially the fact that it's like he's gonna go eat what the Kalisk eats, and this thing shows up. I thought that I figured this out right before the Kalisk stopped and sniffed him. But it was like, as he was fighting the Kalisk, I saw its face and I was like,
I agree. Yeah.
But I think Dan Trachtenberg does it on purpose. Like right before the end of the Kalisk fight, the first Kalisk fight, he shows you like a really deliberate close up of the Kalisk's face. Mm-hmm. And that's really just smart. It's a smart choice of like when to reveal it. Cause my immediate thought was like, oh, its face looks a lot like the little monkey thing. And then I was like, oh my God. I was like, I bet.
Yep.
That's a grown up, or like the monkey's a baby Kalisk.
Which what I thought too. I got it about the same time you did too. So it was like, so he's fighting this bone bison and he has to go through the trees to do it, which again, like predators are always in the trees, right? Which I thought was kind of cool. So he's jumping through the trees with Elle Fanning on his back and like he's able to. What is it? There's like a Luna bug. She's like, oh, don't go in the trees because there's a Luna bug.
Yeah.
Like, you think it's these little things, and then it turns out to be that huge, almost like starfish looking thing that's going through the trees and it tries to eat him.
It's just one thing after another in this movie, I don't know how you could get like bored in this middle section. It's just always moving, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. And the monkey thing, which they name Bud, and it's a girl, they name her Bud.
Yeah.
It like sees that it's about to get eaten. And I think, I can't remember, but it saves Deck.
It jumps in the mouth of the Luna bug and the Luna bug can't bite Deck.
Because it breaks off the tooth of the Luna bug.
Because the skin of Bud is like impenetrable.
Yeah.
And so then, I think Decks are able to kill the Luna bug somehow. I can't remember how. But then he gets one of these bone bisons. And this was pretty sick where he chops it right down the middle with his sword. Yeah. They do this quite a lot in this movie where he uses that sword to go like right through something, but it's his only weapon. And so it's like, they kind of had to figure out like, how is he going to, I think he gets clever about like how he uses it and how he shields himself with it. And I just found like the choreography and showing his resourcefulness as a character to be really compelling and cool throughout. But he kills this big bone bison, and then they wind up setting up camp somewhere, and it's the three of them at night, and Elle Fanning's trying to get to know him a little bit better. Yeah. Like, you know, I think this is where he tells her that he has a brother and stuff. But he's also like, he's very resistant to the idea of we're not friends. You're my tool.
Yeah. And I think this is when she tells him that she was more sympathetic, programmed to be that way. And he's like, no, you can't have that. That's weakness. That's weakness. And she says, well, there's this thing on planet Earth called a wolf. And a wolf fights in a pack. And he's like, oh, I think I want to hunt a wolf, which is like really funny. She's like, well, the alpha wolf, he's like, oh, the alpha wolf must be the one that kills the most. And she's like, no, the alpha wolf is the one who protects the rest of the hunters and protects the rest of the pack. And he's like, oh, okay, well, I'll be the alpha wolf, but I'll also kill the most.
It was kind of, which like there's like humor that comes out of that too, but it's also like it's endearing. Like it's like
it is,
kind of like the way that Deck still uses his Yautja sort of indoctrination to filter to make it like okay, here's how I'm gonna become a pack animal. Like, as long as I'm still in charge.
Yeah.
But yeah, in this scene where they're eating the meat too, the baby Bud spits all this blue stuff all over him and Elle Fanning eventually too, because she's got it in her hair. And he gets really mad and he's like, "What?" You know, and then she's like, she's like, "I think she's marking you.
Yeah.
I think she just wants you to, she wants you to be part of her, her clan." And he's like, and he's like, again, he always says, he's like, "I don't have a clan. Like, I'm, you know, I'm a, you know, I hunt alone. Like, I don't, you know." But then he gives Bud some of the food. And then in the morning, while Bud's still asleep, he picks up Elle Fanning and he moves on. And she's like, she's like, "Well, why don't we wake Bud up?" And he's like, "Is it because she'd slow us down, you know?"
Yeah.
And and again, it's like, "I have no use for her. I don't need," she's like, "Well, she could be useful. She could help." And he's like, "I don't need her help." And he's like, "I'm using you as a tool. I'm not using, I don't," like, he's still very prideful about, like, like, "I want to go fight the Callus by myself," you know?
And it is, a very, very, very good storytelling principles. He hasn't really learned the lesson, right? His lesson that he needs to learn. He should be fighting in a pack and using things to his advantage, but he hasn't learned that. He's slowly getting there. He let it spit on him and, like, he gave it food, but he hasn't learned it. So
And at some point in here, Elle Fanning's character tells us, or tells Deck, that she has what she would call a sister, and her sister's name is Tessa. And we meet Tessa. They were both sort of beat up in this confrontation with a Callus.
Right.
And we meet Tessa and we, you know, see that her face is all ripped up, and it's the shot from the trailer where, like, the little, like, probe goes into her ear and, you know, and they're sort of bringing her back online, and this is all converging as, you know, as Thea, which is the character that's strapped to Deck's back, brings Deck to the lair of the Callus, like where they where they had the confrontation. And this is where we find Thea's legs. And as Thea is sort of getting her legs back on, she sort of sends out a call to her sister Tessa and the other synths. And this is where, this is sort of a turn where she looks at Deck and she's like, "Hey, I'm sorry. I didn't tell you everything. Like, I'm actually here hunting the Callus too. Like, my mission and my sister's mission." And I really liked this, like, the sense of betrayal that he has, where he's like, "You're going to try to take my trophy," but also, like, "You lied to me. Like, you did all that, you know?"
Yeah.
I thought this was really a really cool kind of, right, you know, middle of or end of the second act kind of.
Well, this is like a mid, this is a great midpoint.
Yeah.
Because at the midpoint, you want some sort of surprise, right? You want something in the story to change. And this is a huge betrayal, right? So this is a really big kind of shift in the story. So he's like all pissed and she's trying to put her legs back on and the Callus shows up.
Yeah.
And so he starts to fight it. And I mean, he cuts off its arm. And then
cuts off its tail, its tail first, and that's when his tail just grows right back. And it's like,
and it's like, whoa, it's like immediate. And then he starts, he really is doing a good job of beating this character.
Yeah, it's this cool scene shot from the trailer where he goes underneath it and slices it, like, right, but that just comes right back together. And at a certain point, he slices its whole head off, like, he gets on top of it, and like, and it's it's like, man, he's really, you know, but also the Callus is like, so cool, like the, the shot where Deck yells at it and then it yells back at him and its whole face opens up is like the design of this creature is like awesome, you know?
It's very, very cool.
And
he he cuts off his head, but then it just reattaches and it grabs him and then it sniffs him and it like stops and it is kind of looking at him, and this is kind of like, oh, okay, the
this is an Bud adult is version of Bud.
And and it stops. It doesn't kill him, but I think this is when, what's her other name? Elle Fanning plays
Tessa.
Tessa
shows up with this army of synths, and they sort of take over the scene. And I can't remember.
They find a grenade, like a freezing grenade, because Tessa found the ship.
Tessa found his ship that he was separated from when he first arrived at the planet, and she gets a bunch of his weapons, including like the classic Predator tracking cannon, which was given to him at the beginning of the movie by Quay. The classic like triangle tracker Predator cannon. He gives it to him. He's like, "Don't blow yourself up with this," you know? And then Tessa finds that and a bunch of grenades that freeze things, and she, you know, throws the freezing grenade at the Callus, and and Deck, and they both freeze, and then they take the synths take both Deck and the Kallusk, you know, as kind of their trophies. Yeah. And like, you know, which I also liked this parallel, that as like the synths sort of being the foot soldiers of the Weyland-Yutani mm-hmm. Corporation, that they have a very similar culture. And again, the Weyland-Yutani Corporation, this is human culture we're talking about. Yeah. That has a very similar culture where it's like, bring me back this trophy. Bring mm-hmm. me back, you know, like the whole Alien and franchise is the Weyland-Yutani Corporation trying to get these trophies, trying to get these yeah. xenomorphs. And again, like the parallels here of like realizing that the Yautja really respect human beings as like a formidable opponent and foe.
Right, right.
And that there's a lot in common actually with both societies. But yeah, so now our hero, it's kind of like a all is lost moment where he's, you know, he's lost like all of his armor's gone, all of his weapons are gone, and he's strapped yeah. down, and he's being told by Tessa that like, you're the property of the Weyland-Yutani Corporation.
Now, yeah. You know? Well, and Tessa and Thea, like he wakes up and they like, they're researching him, and Tessa is like, oh, this is a runt. Like they usually cull the herd. So why are you here? Mm-hmm. And Thea keeps saying like, well, we can use him, you know, or she's trying to save him.
Yeah.
And this is when we find out Tessa's like, why were we created to be more sympathetic? And Thea's like, so that we could exploit these animals or exploit them, which I was like, oh man, that's a good little, I like that whole thing, that whole trait. And Tessa's like, yeah, like that's why we did it. But now you're a liability. And we can, you know, this whole Tessa Thea thing, it didn't work the best for me. That was like kind of one of the weak things, because Thea is talking up Tessa for the first half of the movie. Like, oh, she's so great. And she's so amazing. And like, you know, even Deck is the one who says like, oh, is this your sister? And she's like, oh yeah, I guess she could be my sister.
I actually agree. I feel like if there's one thing I could get nitpicky about,
yes.
it's not just Tessa, but actually all the synths, that like what we know about Weyland-Yutani synths from a lot of different properties is that like they can be really good fighters, like they can be really yeah. strong. And I kind of wish they had shown a little bit that like this army of synths and Tessa are like hard to kill, because yeah. In our final act, like he's sort of taking them out like they're all just sort of really easy
easy
pawns,
targets, yeah.
you know, like and I kind of wish it, like, it's sort of like when you think about like John Wick, where he's just taking out guy after like all these guys. At least the guys that he's fighting are like putting up a decent fight.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it feels like all of these, like this whole army of synths and this final act are just sort of like, they're just dying so easily. Yeah. And, but it's a small thing. And I also think it's like, yeah, Tessa doesn't really hit as hard as like a main antagonist as maybe she could.
No, but I mean, it wasn't the worst thing. It was fine. But basically Tessa's like, no, we're going to kill him. Like our job is to bring the Kallusk back, and like and you're going to slow me down. So she kind of puts Thea offline, and she's.
Well, and this was kind of a writing contrivance too. This was sort of a plot armor moment where she's like, she's like, we're going to kill him. And then she just like leaves and doesn't kill him. And I was like, you could just do it. You could just do it right now. Like do it. You know, it's like, you know, again, Scott from Austin Powers, like I got a gun in my room.
I'll just go and shoot him right now.
Boom. We'll do
it. That's not how things are done.
Scott, you just don't get it. Do you? You don't.
Like, this was
Yeah.
And the toy comes back at this point.
I liked this a lot.
Like, I did like this too.
This other synth comes because he's mad at Thea. Like he's like, he's like strapped down and he's just like, and I like this line too, where he goes like, you don't use me, I use you. Like this thing of like, you used me, like you used me to get, and he's like, you don't, like, because basically Thea was using his legs to get her to her legs.
Yeah.
While she was telling him, you know, like, and he's like, I like that, where he's like, you don't use me, I use, like, I'm not a tool, you're a tool.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, but then Thea does actually like Deck. Like she's developed a kind of affinity for him. And so when this other synth comes in and he picks up this toy thing, they start talking to each other in the Yautja language. And The guy's like, what is this? And then he's like, tell him it's a toy. And he's like, she's like, it's a toy. Or toy. And then he's like, tell him to look.
Oh, no, tell it's a map. He's like, tell him it's a map.
Yeah.
And he ends up looking at it, but it explodes. It burns. It blows his head off.
Yeah, because he tells her, he's like, it's a toy, but tell him it's a map. And he's like, it's for kids. And then when it blows the guy's head off, she's like, that's for kids?
Yowtja kids is what he says.
So they get him out and kind of they get out and escape.
He Deck escapes, but Thea is stayed. She gets stuck on there. She can't.
Yeah, and I think that Deck, he like escapes into the woods, and like this is like his kind of, in like a Rambo movie, this would be like the scene where he's like, you know, or I guess in the original Predator, this is like when Arnold Schwarzenegger is like, okay, now it's time for me to like cover myself in.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like to like prepare for the final battle. But I really, this is where all that stuff that's been platformed in the second act comes back. Like he goes and gets the little slugs that he's going to use as like, as hand grenades. There were these little eels that we saw earlier that spit venom, but we found out that they like eating these little like seeds. So he goes and feeds them and gets them to come and like be his friends, you know? And then, he goes and gets like a big fang of, you know, maybe like one of that bug that tried to eat him earlier. And puts that on his arm, and that's sort of like his stand-in for what predators usually have, which is that big arm blade.
I thought
this was so cool. I just was like, this is awesome. Like,
yeah.
And then he makes himself a little predator mask out of.
He does. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really cool. And this is definitely like okay, here's the third act. Everything is going to be resolved.
Yeah.
After he gets everything together, he is able to find their base camp and he finds Bud.
Yeah.
He does. Which Bud was so funny. Like in this, she's like, anytime she kills anything, she's like replicating the predator and like, I thought it was a really funny way to use that.
Yeah. I didn't find it like, that's a character that could totally be obnoxious or you know, it could be like Jar Jar Binksy, but I didn't find it that way at all. And I think Bud totally worked.
I thought Bud was great. A great comedic relief, but also,
Has he realized that it's a callous baby yet? Has he realized that?
I think he, when does he realize it? I think he has. I can't remember when they find out.
I can't remember.
I think maybe it was on the ship or maybe not. I can't remember. It's like they find out at some point.
But basically he's going back to take care of Tessa and, you know, cause he's like, nobody messes with me. And he's going back like, and he's going to like free the Kalisk and free Thea. And there's just like this really cool action set piece where he's just going around eliminating this army of synths one by one. And just, you know, and we're really seeing our main character like step into his power and be like his strongest version of himself that we've seen so far and is most like confident and self-assured and, you know, and they wind up freeing the Kalisk, but this is where like Tessa shows up in the giant mech suit.
Yeah. Well, and I do have to say, sorry, one thing, this is where I was most disappointed about this. So a really cool scene where he's killing all the different synths, and even Thea gets turned back on and her legs end up fighting one of the synths, which was kind of fun. That was a fun little scene. But this scene, he's kneeling down and all these synths are coming up behind him, and there's like a ton, there's like 30 or so, right? And he's just sitting there, and this part I was like, oh man, because I was like, this is going to be so cool. He's going to fight all of these synths and just totally annihilate all of them.
Yeah.
But what ends up happening is those like barb things that shoot, that get big and explode, like they all explode and they kill all the synths. And then he just kind of stands up and walks away. And I was like, oh, that was okay. But I would have loved to have seen him take out, like, you can still have the barbs going off, but like I wanted a huge action sequence where he is fighting all of them and he has to like kill a bunch of them. Right. And like,
kind of like the scene in Prey when he fights all those like fur trapper guys.
Or like in, you know, in The Dark Knight when Batman has to take out a whole SWAT team and he's got to do all these things to hurt them, but not kill them. Like this, I just wanted him to just totally unload on all of these guys. And I was like, oh, that would have been so cool. But it's okay.
There was enough going on in this sequence that, like, having that sort of be like an Indiana Jones, you know, just shoot the guy.
Yeah.
Like, kind of like worked for me just fine.
Yeah. It wasn't bad. Like, I still love it, but I was like, oh, it would have been so cool to see that fight scene.
Yeah.
But we also get the fight scene between the dad, which was made up for it. So yeah, that was my only like, oh, I wish I could have had another really, really cool, fight choreography moment. But anyway,
Tessa shows up in the big mech suit, and we're definitely doing a reference here to like Aliens and and I kind of like, you know, this again, this like subversion of like it being a synth now that the synth is like they're sort of battling over the trophy that Tessa's like, I want the trophy of the Kallisk. Yeah. I'm going to take the Kallisk to the Weyland-Yutani Corporation. And
this did change. Remember when we talked about Alien Romulus, all the good synths are American. And all the bad synths are British. I was kind of hoping that Tessa would have a British accent.
Yeah.
Cause she's bad, but she does that anyway. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. I don't know why they didn't do that.
They should have. It would have been great.
Dan Trachtenberg wasn't paying attention. That's the rule.
Yeah, come on, man.
And that's another reason why Tessa's not that great of an antagonist. She should have a British accent.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can't remember. How do they finish her off? How do they?
So yeah, she's fighting. They're fighting back and forth. And then she gets eaten by the Kallisk.
Right.
And we think everything is done. But then she has a bomb with her, one of the ice bombs, and it kills the Kallisk from inside. Like it kills her. And then like I thought that she had just got, how does she actually die? Cause
I think
like,
that Deck kills her. Cause she's his trophy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Cause he cuts off, I think he cuts off her head.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
I think he just like rips her head off or something.
Or does Thea kill her? I should be able to remember, but I can't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember. But yeah, anyway, like, so the Mama Kallisk actually does die. Turns out you can kill them if you like fully blow them up. If you like, she like from the inside, you know, Thea or Tessa makes the Kallisk blow up. But now we are left with Deck, Thea, and Bud as a crew, going back to Yautja Prime. And she keeps saying, like, this whole time, Thea keeps looking at Deck and saying, like, Deck of the Yautja. And he keeps saying, not yet. You know, not yet. I haven't earned it yet. And, but now she says, like, Deck of the Yautja. And he's like, maybe, you know, like, and they go back to Yautja Prime. And this was just so satisfying. Like, this was, like, his dad is, I more than Tessa, his dad to me is like the main antagonist of this film.
Oh,
even though
he's
not in the whole middle part. His dad is such a like we like Deck so much that we're like, screw Deck's dad.
Like, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We want Deck to avenge Quay. Cause Quay was awesome too. Quay's in the movie. We're like not even 10 minutes.
Yeah, Quay's awesome.
And we're like, dude, that guy was awesome. He looked cool and he was cool. So yeah, we get this showdown between Deck and his dad and they're fighting and Deck is, I mean, like, it's pretty, actually, first the two guards come.
Yeah, he throws Tessa's skull at his dad and goes, this is my trophy. And it's his dad's like, what is this? Like, he's like, you're an embarrassment. Yeah, so he tells these two guards to like kill him. And Deck just like, you know, like it's really like, it's like the scene of Neo in the hall being the one. Mm-hmm. And it's like, this is like, Deck's just like, he just takes these two guys out, like, you know, and then his dad says to him, he's like, maybe the stronger son did survive. Like maybe, you know, but that night he's like, but I'm going to get you, you know, like I'm going to take you down now. And I thought the way that Deck fought his dad here was so cool. I thought the fact that he turned the ship on to like kick gravel at his dad's like, cause his dad puts on his cloak so that he can't see him. So he turns like the engines of his ship on so that it'll like throw gravel at him. So we can like sort of see the gravel bouncing off of him. And he, it was awesome.
Yeah. It was great. They have this really, really cool fight. And then Deck is able to get the same, he's able to use the same, you know, I don't, what
whatever, like it, device the restrains him and pulls
restraining
him
device.
With,
And he pulls down and he's like, oh, okay. And then
he puts the, like a spear right into his dad's forehead and then like pulls it back, you know?
Yeah, and then yeah. and Bud comes.
His dad's like bigger. But I love this. His dad's like he's like, all right, you can join the clan. He's like, let me go and you can join the clan. And then Bud comes up behind him. Bud's gotten a lot bigger. He's not a full grown Kallus yet, but he's a lot bigger. And he just bites his dad's head right off. Yeah. And I love this because he just goes, I already have a clan. You know, and it's just like, I don't want to join your stupid clan. Like
And then he steals the cloak and he puts it on. He's like, okay. And this then
which is also kind of cool that it's like his dad becomes his trophy in a way too. And that like the other members of the clan have respect for him, that like they don't come down and try to fight him. It's like, all right, respect. Like this runt came in and we all watched it. He killed his old man fair and square.
Yeah.
And it's like him. And then this is when Thea looks at him and goes, Deck of the Yautja. And he's like, the movie ends, says Predator Badlands.
Yeah.
And I thought this stinger was so cool.
It was pretty cool.
I thought this stinger was awesome. Because we come back in and there's a ship flying toward them after like where he's at, you know, after he's just killed his dad. And she says, like, more enemy, like, or what does she say? Yeah. Like,
she's like, who is this more
friends of yours or more? Yeah.
Yeah.
And he goes, no, that's my mother. And
yeah,
and it's like we've never seen a woman Yautja in
female predators. Yeah, So and it makes me think, like, man, what is this gonna be like? What's the next thing? So
I immediately was like, bring on the next one. Like and this movie's doing very well at the box office, which I'm happy about.
Me too.
I think it's very likely we're gonna get to see a continuation of the adventures of Deck and Thea and Bud. So. Yeah.
I think we will, and I'd love. I'm very excited to see what happens with the rest of these movies. So that was the movie, though. It was great. It was a ton of fun.
I think, like, how crazy that, like, you take the Predator franchise, and now it's like you actually can start a whole new thing with these three characters.
Yeah.
Or if you want, you could just say, let's just leave it all implied and let's go do something else, because this is a franchise sort of known for always reinventing itself. Right. So who knows what direction they'll want to go next, but like, I would be excited to see at least one more, adventure from these three. But if this is all we get, this is great. And it works on its own. It's a very nice, tight, contained story. And So we'll get into our ratings here. Our scores. If this is your first time watching our show, we give scores out of 10, 10 being the best. We give a technical rating for the technical craft of the film. We give a score for the ending. We give a score for rewatchability. We give a score for the cultural significance and impact, and a score for our subjective feelings on the film. Kramer, what is your technical rating for Predator Badlands?
My technical rating is a 9. It was structured very, very well. The visual effects were great. Like we said, I was never really taken out, especially with Deck. I mean, he looks really, really good. Like his pincers, you know, I mean, the mandibles that he's got, they're really, I thought it was really great. So technically sound in the visuals, but also the storytelling and the cinematography was great. The fight choreography was really, really good. So the soundtrack was good too.
Yeah.
So all around, it was great.
Yeah, I got it at a 9 as well. If I'm docking a point for anything, it's maybe just that, like, maybe you could make those synths a little bit more formidable.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Fights, like, if humans are going to send those in their place to a planet this kind of hard to survive on, it should be because they're like better soldiers than humans would be.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, maybe making Tessa a little bit more of a threat.
Yeah.
But outside of that, like, that's a really nitpicky thing. Like,
this movie,
things you said to, like, I'm just like, what they needed to accomplish visually, they did so well. I'm so impressed with that. I liked this movie so much more than I expected to, and I expected to like it. It really kind of blew me away.
Yeah.
How about the ending?
The ending, I gave a 7.5. Maybe I should give it higher because it was, I'm going to give it an 8, but it also, the one thing I wish the fight was a little bit, you know, with the synths, like you're saying, they were a little too easy to kill. I kind of would have liked a little bit harder on that. And same with Tessa, if she could have been a little bit more formidable. But the fact that we don't
remember how the Tessa fight ended is like, that's interesting.
I know. But the dad fight was awesome. So it makes up for a lot of it.
Yeah, I give it a 9 just because of the feeling of like that last scene on Yautja Prime with his dad. And like, I just felt like that was such a satisfying way to conclude it. And I also felt like the stinger of like, that's my mother was awesome. Like, it just like everything in this movie, I just kept going like, hell yeah. Like,
yeah. So it's good stuff.
I left feeling good. The movie ended and I was like, that was awesome. Mm-hmm. So a 9, how about rewatchability?
Rewatchability, I gave a 9. I really want to watch it again, and it seems like it's just going to be a fun movie to, and it's not too long. I think it's 1 hour and 50 minutes. So yep. They kept it under 2 hours, which is a great thing. So
I think it's like 107 with credits. So it's probably like 1 hour and 40 minutes, you know, it's like,
Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
And, I want to go see this again in theaters. Mm-hmm. I was telling Olivia about how much I liked it. She was like, well, now I want to see it. I was like, oh, I'll see it again.
Yeah.
So, I gave it 9. I feel like this is of the Predator franchise. If I'm gonna pop in a Predator movie these days, it's like I'm probably gonna watch a Dan Trachtenberg movie. Like I'm gonna watch Prey, and I got to go watch Killer of Killers, and I'm gonna watch this one. So yeah.
Yep.
How about cultural impact?
Cultural impact, I'm giving an 8. I don't know how long term this will do. I think it will do well because I think they're going to keep making it. So it's made an impact in the short time that it's been out. And I think it will continue this franchise in an interesting direction. So
I had it at 7.5 and I'm bumping it up to an 8 because I do think that there's a good chance that with time, they're going to keep making these movies. And part of the story of this franchise is going to be what an impressive job Dan Trachtenberg did at coming in and like giving it new life after it really felt like it might be dead in the water after Alien versus Predator Requiem. And then the Predator, it felt like a franchise that might just be like, that one might just be over. And he really came back and brought it back to life in a really big way.
Yeah.
And I think down the line that'll be, you know, a big part of the story of this, but also it's like, I don't know. It's movies like, you know, Matt Reeves's Planet of the Apes films and the way that I think he brought that franchise back to life. There's still so many people who don't know about those movies. And I don't know, maybe this could still be like that where like,
well, and that's interesting too, because he didn't do Rise of the Planet of the Apes. It was, what's his name?
Right.
But I think more people are seeing this. Oh, maybe, I don't know. Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see what happens, because this is a great, great movie. Go out and see it. I think it's a ton of fun.
What's your subjective score?
My subjective score is a 9. I had a ton of fun. I went with my two boys who are 12 and 10. They were just like, oh, like everything was so cool for them, which made it even more fun for me.
Yeah.
And even me, I was just like, man, this movie's just, I was into it the whole time. There was nothing that really took me out. Obviously, I have those little nitpicks, but they're not enough to, like, I just loved this movie. It was so fun.
Me too. 9. It was awesome. I just was like, this, you know, I love movies like this. I love movies that feel important and meaningful and you know, but I also just like, part of the reason why I love movies is because I love cool movies. And this is just a cool movie from start to finish. I was with it the entire way. I thought that they crushed it. Let us know what you thought in the comments. Next week we're going to be watching The Running Man. So we're going to see if Edgar Wright still got the sauce.
I'm excited.
We'll see, you know, we're getting into the end of the year where like there's bangers kind of coming out every week. So go see The Running Man if you want to watch along with the show. And as always, like, share, comment, subscribe, do all those good things. And we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.